Talk show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson, and for the next hour, we're going to be talking about all things food, and we're going to be eating stuff as usual.
I'm very excited about that too.
I'm joined by my fellow presenter Guy Routledge of Saplin Digital and the Food Rush, and
that's Ollie's, right, yeah.
Ollie's done a bunk this morning.
I think he's hungover or something.
I don't know, he's off somewhere.
Something like that.
So he's not here today, but we don't care about that. There's loads of stuff to eat. We've just judged the Food Talk Awards finalists.
Mm.
So I thought, Guy, because I didn't invite you actually for the tasting, can't remember why.
You knew that I would just eat everything.
Yeah. You just say yes
to give any results.
You just say yeah, 10 out of 10 for everything.
Yes,
so what
Love
I've done
it.
Is I bought you a little selection of the stuff that I quite liked.
Oh,
I can't tell you who
kind.
The winners are because it'll be announced in June. But I just thought you might like a little try.
I would love to try. You know how much I love to try things.
Yeah, just some of the stuff that was easier to bring. And I was going to go through the categories so you can have a look.
Excellent.
Now we've got Ed Foy of Press with us. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
Are you're lucky? Look, we've got all this stuff for you to taste.
I'm very excited.
Oh, no, that
it was
good.
An unexpected bonus.
Yeah, indeed. And Johnny Holmes from Vendy's. Johnny, you up for tasting some of this? You're not vegan.
Yeah, very
or,
much so.
Yeah, I'm vegetarian
intrigued,
or any of that. You're okay.
What we're about to let ourselves into.
Do you drink alcohol?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Good. Okay, it means we can have a little bit of everything.
I think we can all check that box.
I've got some spoons. So if I just talk, you know, just tell you a little bit about the awards. You're presenting actually at the awards ceremony, aren't you, with Ollie and
Am
me?
I?
Yes,
I knew that already. I thought I'd just stick to it.
And it's on June the 15th, I believe. Yes, I've got that right. I'm getting a nod from Harry down the end there. And it's going to be just the most amazing, like it was last year.
We've got
great
a fab venue event. Again as well.
Yes.
Different venue.
Banking Hall in the middle, near the
big bank in the middle of London.
And we've got all these different awards, but there's loads and loads of taste awards, and we don't want to cut across, you know, great taste awards by any means, which is for me is the best.
Absolutely,
taste
yeah.
awards. Yep. And I look out quite a lot, don't you, for people who've won taste awards, because I know that whatever you're going to have is going to be good.
It's a great kind of stamp of authority. You know that if somebody smart has said this is award winning, then
yeah.
you know, you're going to get something
exactly.
something good or something interesting or innovative or whatever. So,
but we don't give just taste awards. That's not really the point of what we're doing. So what we're really interested in is looking at things that are the innovative, that are different, and that are difficult to do. We've already got a taste bar, if you like. You know, we're not going to recommend anything. We're not going to have award winners.
Great, hasn't it? Yeah.
So for us, that's a given. But in a way, we don't differentiate between being amazing taste and being really good taste.
Mm.
What we do is look at things
How
that are really difficult.
Is.
Yeah. So our first All in the Taste Award is a sort of food one. And we had 5 gold award winners, and what we do at the award ceremony is we have a little marketplace, and the people who come to the award ceremony can taste the stuff, which I think is great because you get
brilliant.
Involved.
It worked really well last year,
yeah.
So we had all the tables lined up with the producers. They were there. They got a chance to speak to all of the guests who were coming through. They got to try a little bit and talk about the product, which I think is so important for these guys to have that one-on-one communication and
bit of feedback
and get to see somebody enjoying their product for the first time. Because you
then
can
the
learn
great
a lot
thing though
from
is that
the
then you can vote.
Yeah, exactly.
So the audience voted, which meant that everybody got really involved, which I thought was great.
Mm.
Also, the thing I was most pleased about is a lot of business cards were being swapped.
Mm.
People saying, where do you get that supplier from? And I was really proud of that. I think that's
and
great.
And there was, obviously there was the award ceremony part as well, but then afterwards everyone just kind of piled in and started chatting to each other.
Yeah,
and that was
great.
One of the most vibrant parts of the evening. Probably because there'd been a bit of wine flowing as well.
Indeed.
It was fantastic atmosphere, and really looking forward to getting involved again and presenting some awards.
So our following 5 finalists were Baked by Nilu, and these are sort of signature chocolate brownies. I haven't got any with me, sorry about that.
Ooh.
But
and these are gluten, dairy, soya and soya free and vegan.
Now that how hard is that? So it's all of
very,
those
very
things
difficult,
really
yeah.
difficult. And you wouldn't know, they tasted incredible. Mm. So luckily there are going to be some of those to taste on the
Brilliant.
Night. So I haven't got any of those. Then Kinomi nuts, these are wild nuts grown in pods in
the
Brazil.
Baru Baru nuts or Barry nuts or something like that. She
really,
was on
really,
the show.
Exactly. Mm. Really, really unusual and different. And
really tasty.
none of those are on the market apart from through Kinomi Nuts. So and they tasted amazing. So that's really good. Now, we know the Fifth Dimension boys because they've been on the show a couple of times.
And they were at the awards last year, I believe. Yeah.
Do you want to have a little taste of the thing that's got into the
I would love to. And we can pass it around to our other guests as well. There's a spoon.
So what they've done is they normally make these amazing chocolates. What they've done here is they've made a soy caramel sauce. So it's a caramel sauce.
Yeah, okay.
But you know, people quite like that salty, chocolatey
caramel
taste.
Is, you know,
what they've done is they've used soy sauce instead of anything else. So I'm going to pass it around. Mm. Here you go. See what you think. I'm going to have a little taste one in that.
So yeah, salted caramel is one of those things. It seems to be put in everything these days. I was at my local pub the other day, and they're doing a salted caramel espresso martini. And
Ed,
my God,
do you think of that?
I think that's great. If you put salted caramel on anything, it sells.
But that, if you heat that up a little bit and then pour that over some amazingly ice cold ice cream, how
that is incredible. Amazing.
Do you
I'd be very happy with that.
And it doesn't taste like soy sauce, even though it's got that kind of base to it. But it's just a nice little bit of that kind of umami thing going on behind the scenes.
Do you like that? Thumbs up. I mean, you've got to be slightly mad to put soy sauce in something, but it just works, doesn't it? And it's quite unusual. And you can get a little jar of this. And again, if you come to the awards, you'll be able to taste those. But,
it is quite a small jar. I mean, what's the size on that?
It's tiny, but you only need a little bit, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's only like 100 ml or something.
So that was that soy sauce based caramel, which we thought was a bit different.
Very good.
This is my favourite. I've now bought this. I can't do without it in my house.
Are these impartial awards, Sue?
Well, we've got a whole panel, so it's not just me. There's a very esteemed panel tasting all this stuff. So I now buy this and have this in my house because I just love it. I'm going to pass it over.
So what have we got here?
This is banana ketchup. Sounds disgusting. Ooh. It's amazing. Lucy down the end there, the producer's going, it's lovely. What is lovely?
It is so good.
Now, I love Rubies in the Rubble because this company, what they do is they take... So in this instance, they take bananas that get discarded or rejected at the supermarket or the wrong shape or whatever it is. And they've made this ketchup out of it. All of their products are made with food waste, which is a great thing, full stop.
It really is, yeah.
I really like this banana ketchup because it sort of tastes like bananas, but it's quite spicy.
It's got a kick to it, and you don't normally like spice, but
I just don't like my head being blown off, just because of you and Ollie.
Yeah, fair enough.
We do raw chilies for breakfast. I love that. Now I think that's fab.
Yeah, and it's got a real nice kind of banana-y sweetness
with
to it, and then a nice warm
cheese
really
and banana
good
ketchup sandwiches with that.
I think I've still got a little bit left in my fridge at home, and it is.
I'm looking at our other boys here.
I mean, the spiciness is the exciting bit at the end for me. But I travel with a bottle of Tabasco in my bag, so
I quite like the banana thing because it gives it a tiny sweet edge to it.
Yeah, I think it's quite a well-known thing in the Caribbean. I remember having banana ketchup over there a number of times, with bacon and eggs in the morning for breakfast. Mm. Oh, it's brilliant,
Johnny.
Yeah, it's a nice mix of the sort of pickle with a bit of sweetness. It's lovely.
And I love the fact that it's food waste.
Yeah, it's doing good for the planet as well, which is what we're all about.
And then this was another one that we had for the. I'm sorry about this. You're going to have to taste it with a teaspoon. Should have bought some bread, shouldn't I? So this is Morocco Gold. And the guys from there, this is the first extra virgin olive oil to be sold in the UK from Morocco. It's brand new. It's single estate virgin olive oil
and is it single tree as well? I know you can get obsessed with making the oil from just one tree.
So I really quite like that. I think it's really good to also cook with because it's sometimes you get olive oil and it's got a really strong grass flavor and for me the olive oil is not about having a huge big flavor.
Yeah, it's very light, actually.
It's really nice.
A little bit grassy.
Slightly creamy.
I think my palate might have been blown away by
the banana ketchup.
We should maybe have left that to the end.
I should have done that to start with, shouldn't I? Sorry about that.
But no, it's like some extra virgin oils that you get, they're very kind of cloyy in the mouth and, you know, they just kind of coat everything. But this is very, very
buttery.
Light. Yeah. Really good.
So I'm really proud of these chaps because this is their first foray into the UK. There's no other, Moroccan extra virgin olive oil in the UK. And I thought they've done a really good job.
Interesting. Are they Moroccan guys or are they UK guys who have bought it in from Morocco?
I think it's a mixture. Okay. Really, really nice.
Interesting. Lovely to meet them at the awards.
Then when we did exactly the same with drink. And I haven't got any of those with me. Sorry about that.
you're normally packing drink.
Well, it's quite difficult to take on the tube. Clink, clink, clink. Yumcha, which I hadn't heard of before, they make, again, lots of quite Moroccan-based stuff. And this was Moroccan mint iced tea. And again, you'll be able to taste that at the awards. And this is using gunpowder tea leaves.
I'm not familiar with those.
And those are the tea leaves that make Berber whiskey.
They're not used to make really gunpowder, I assume.
No. Well, I don't think so, anyway.
And it's not tea that will blow your head off.
No, but that...
Sorry, I'll stop again, with all the gunpowder-related puns.
Really different, really interesting. And then my absolute total favourite, World of Zing.
Yes.
Yeah. So I really like... Do you remember...
What was it? Pritesh Moody, is it?
Yeah, Pritesh.
Yeah.
And he comes from a family that mixes spices. I mean, they've been in the spice
trade. And they do those pre-mixed cocktails as well.
Yeah, so it was the pre-mixed Bordeaux barrel-aged Negroni cocktail that's got to the final.
I remember.
You'd be able to taste that at the awards as well. That's a shame.
I could just go and buy some of the stuff, couldn't I?
But again, quite difficult because it's quite difficult to pre-mix cocktails and get it exactly right.
A lot of the ones that are
really aromatic.
A lot of the ones that you buy off the shelf, they're so full of sugar to preserve them or whatever. I don't know the reason behind it, but it's always a real disappointment. But this stuff was fantastic.
Absolutely. Well, you've got to taste that. Then Dalston's Cola, again, a really difficult thing to do, to make a cola that tastes amazing using cola nuts, citrus spices, lavender, and, no artificial ingredients. It's really hard and tastes fab.
Yeah, and I think I remember trying this before and it being a very grown-up tasting cola rather than like the sweet stuff that you'd give to the kids. Really complex flavours in there. Really, really good.
And then we had Long Flint drinks, who I'd never heard of before.
I love these guys; are brilliant. Yeah. And whenever I see their bottles kind of presented at restaurants and bars and stuff like that, they kind of embed them into this piece of rock, and it always the bottle is so beautiful. You want to pick it up and look at it, but you can't because it's like stuck into this massive slab of concrete. But I met the founder probably a year or so ago, and again, pre-mixed cocktails. Very, very,
well, this
very
one that
tasty.
We were really impressed by was the hibiscus gin tonic.
That's great.
Cold brewed hibiscus flowers, really difficult to do with gin and tonic, and a really lovely long drink, actually. It's only 5% proof, but absolutely gorgeous and not sweet, spot on.
Fantastic.
That was good, yeah. And then Double Dutch, do you know the Double Dutch ladies?
I don't know those guys, no.
No, they're from Holland, obviously. Double Dutch.
Clues
get
in
that.
The name.
Yeah, clues in the name. And they're twin sisters.
Ah, brilliant.
Hence Double Dutch.
That's very clever,
isn't
very
it? Smart. And they've been in the sort of tonic world for a little while because tonics are now big, but they've been there for a little while. And my favourite, and the judges agreed, pomegranate and basil tonic.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Really nice with gin. Oh, just to die for.
You'd probably have to be quite clever with what gin you pair with that so that it doesn't overpower one or the other.
Martin Miller's with pomegranate and basil tonic, then a little twist of black pepper. Oh, that's
brilliant.
Yeah, really
We
nice.
Should go out for a drink sometime. You know all the good stuff.
I'll take some. we need some ice cubes as well.
Brilliant.
Then we had the Clean Eating Award. A lot of people sort of take the mickey out of the term clean eating, but we don't care. We're sticking with that. And our definition of clean eating is a traditional factory produced food that people are used to, like ketchup or mayonnaise, something like that. But somebody who's stripped out all the preservatives, all the additives, all, stuff that you don't need,
and really
try to look at how to reproduce that in a much healthier, sort of cleaner way. So we've deliberately tried to choose stuff that people are very familiar with, but this is different. My favourite out of these, and I can't tell you whether the other judges agreed with me, was something called mousse maple butter.
I love
Have you
that
had
stuff.
It?
Yeah, I had it at Christmas, like maybe 2 or 3 years ago. There was a small exhibition with the guys who run Kitchen Table Projects. And so I met a whole bunch of, old Food Talk alumni there. But this was a new one to me at the same time. And it's butter blended with maple syrup.
Yeah, it's British butter, maple syrup, and a touch of salt. No, it sounds rubbish.
It's brilliant.
One of the best things I have ever tasted.
I could eat it with a spoon, even though it's, just like eating butter, which is full of calories and not very good for you. But, oh, my God, it's amazing.
And then we had mayonnaise made with avocado oil, which I've just realised I've left in the fridge in the kitchen here. Maybe Harry might be able to go and get it for me in a minute. We'll taste it in a minute. And then this real good ketchup. Now, loads of people are addicted to Heinz tomato ketchup. It's a real staple, but it's jam-packed full of salt.
And sugar.
And quite a lot of sugar. Mm. And what I was really impressed with this is I'm not a great fan of tomato ketchup, actually. Heinz tomato ketchup.
Okay, right.
But I think they've done a great job of almost reproducing Heinz tomato ketchup with 78% less salt, which is really hard to do.
Wow, that's brilliant.
So I'm just going to pass that round.
It's kind of playing in a similar league to Jim Jams, who have, you know, taken on the market leader with, you know, the sugar-free, or not sugar-free, but 80-something percent less sugar in their chocolate spread. Thank you. Mm.
So see what you think about that. And actually, it's got the aftertaste is of tomatoes. It's got the same
tomato-y
consistency. If you put that in a little jar, I don't think anybody would know that it wasn't. It looks very much like Heinz tomato ketchup.
Mm, and it's got that same kind of vinegary finish on it, which is nice, which kind of gives it that freshness. Yeah.
And they use xylitol instead of sugar.
Okay, yeah.
So if your children are really absolutely mad on tomato ketchup and everything, I just think that's a really good alternative.
That's brilliant, yeah.
Are you tomato ketchup boys?
Yeah,
are you?
Sure.
So if you have chips, it's tomato ketchup for you,
definitely.
Is it?
Definitely. Although that banana
ketchup,
the banana ketchup
may take over. Yeah.
I think now I'm more of an aioli kind of person, but I mean, back in the day, I used to have
it's a bit middle-class, that kind
of. I used to have tomato ketchup sandwiches when I was a very young boy. So that's
Johnny, are you tomato
ketchup?
There's
good depth to that, though, more so than I think the Heinz. It's really good with chips, I'm sure.
But I don't think children would notice the difference, and yet there's so much less salt and better for you in terms
of
sugar.
And is there less sugar as well? Oh, because it's xylitol rather than sugar.
So again, I think that's quite a hard thing to do. We've then got green cola. Now, I think they're on the show with us next week, maybe.
A week or so, I think.
Again, really they've tried to make cola, but using stevia, however you should pronounce it. That's really hard because stevia is difficult to work with. It's really hard to work
with. Well, all of these kind of sugar replacements, they're either very chemically or, I mean, because they're something like 100 or 200 times sweeter than sugar itself. So you use a very, very small amount of it to get the same sweetness. And it's, it's really difficult to get the balance and to get the mouthfeel. Sometimes you get that kind of very clinical aftertaste.
And the other thing that they've done is they've used natural caffeine from green coffee beans, which again,
now
we
that
thought,
really interesting.
And again, quite hard. Mm. So we thought that was quite a good thing to do.
Quite a new product. Mm. There was a guy that I met years ago now who was trying to bring like green coffee beans to market to sell, and they were building a coffee machine that would roast them to your own taste profile and stuff like that. I need to find out if they're still going, actually, but it sounded really, really interesting.
And then one of my favourite companies, Urban Cordial. Don't know if you drink cordials, but again, most cordials are horrible and aimed at children and overly sweet. They make really grown-up, lovely, lovely cordials.
Fantastic.
Using cherries and, you know, lavender and black pepper and stuff like that. I've got some for you to taste. Yeah, so do you want to just pour?
Yeah, I'll pour some out while
the
you
one
talk
that
about it.
The judges were most impressed by is this one, which is apple, lemon and fennel cordial.
Oh, that sounds great.
But if you talk to the founders, what they say is really good with gin or vodka.
Isn't everything just good or
possibly.
Gin or vodka?
but actually, you know, it doesn't just have to be a grown-up drink. Mm. It can, you know, it can be, you know, something you can add to just water if you fancy on a summer's day. Yeah. So have a little taste of that, Johnny. What do you think?
That's nice. Quite light, but it's.
I probably diluted it too much.
We picked up a jug from the kitchen and we have no idea if the proportions are right.
You can get the fennel though, can't you?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
Yeah, that's really nice. The fennel is subtle at the end. I mean, fennel is a very, it's a very powerful either herb or spice, or, you know, if you kind of slice it up and put it in a salad or something, it always is very noticeable. But that's just kind of there in the background. Really, really refreshing.
Not bad, eh? And we also had Eat First as part of this Clean Eating Award. And they make teriyaki tofu.
Ooh,
now, I'm not a fan of tofu, as you know. Because I think you have to chew it for 4 months before you can actually swallow it. It's not my thing. But this was really, really good. And it's vegan and dairy and gluten-free, and it uses GM-free soybeans. Really tough thing to make. And really, really good.
Brilliant. I have to try some of that. I do quite like tofu. I mean, it's all about what you kind of flavour it with rather than, you know, the product itself, although I'm sure there is, you know, well-made and not so well-made or mass-produced stuff. But that sounds really good.
And then I'm just going to run through the free-from before we start talking to our guests. But again, these for us are food or drink products where the traditional allergens or ingredients have been removed, but you'd never know it. And really, really tough things to do. I've never tasted a vegan cheese that I remotely like. Sorry to say that. I haven't. because it's just so tough.
It's very difficult. It's you're taking away almost all of the constituent parts of the product.
Exactly.
By, you know, substituting it out.
But Nutcrafter Creamery have come up with an ancient cheddar, which actually is really not bad. And so they've made it to the final.
I look forward to trying that.
Yeah, made it to the final. And then, amazingly, Bonnie Yao has created a Thai satay sauce with no nuts in.
That's amazing. I'm looking through the notes here, just kind of
scanning
ahead.
Well, peanut-free
satay sauce.
Well, you'd never know. How she's done incredible. That, I have no idea.
Has it got different nuts in there?
I think she's used a little bit of coconut.
Okay, well, not really a lot.
No, not exactly. And then Mr. Singh's, I don't really like cooking paste because I think they're mostly awful. But he's managed to come up with a Punjabi cooking paste, and I've used it. It is fabulous.
Really? Is it like a jar of pre-mixed stuff?
A jar, which on the face of it, you'd think, no way. And it is amazing. Not only that, though, it's vegan and gluten-free. Again, really hard to do.
Mm.
Perfect.
Very good.
And then... the next three, I was blown away by it, really. La Cremerie, who are quite new, made vanilla yogurt, and it is totally dairy-free.
Yeah, they do a basil one as well. Which
it's just incredible.
Yeah,
very good. If it's something, you know, if you are lactose intolerant, it's quite hard to find something. This is a really good...
It's rice, isn't it?
Rice milk. It's amazing. And then Champion and Reeves have made nougat. Or when I was a kid, I used to call it nugget. You know, nougat.
I think I used to call it that as well.
And again, they've made it gelatin-free.
Gelatin-free, really hard thing to do.
Gluten and gelatin-free. Mm. And then my daughter can't... She's celiac, so she's, you know, seriously celiac. And we've never been able to find pastry, and she loves pies. Never. Mm. So I got this pastry mix from Osterhost, who are on the show in a week or two. And this is gluten and wheat flour-free flour. Mix thing. Mm. And I just made a pizza base out of it just to see. Mm. And normally when you use that stuff, you can't roll it. You can't use it. It's really difficult. It just breaks up.
Yeah.
And this was amazing. It was elastic. You could use it and it tasted good. So fantastic. I'm really impressed by these guys. So aren't we lucky? We've got all these incredible people.
Absolutely. It's amazing. And whilst I've either seen some of these guys before or heard of them or had the opportunity to taste some of them, it's always great to kind of see new things coming through as well.
It is.
There's so much great stuff out there. How could you possibly have tasted and experienced everything?
But we're cutting it down for people.
Well, yeah.
Because if we say it's good, it's good.
It's got that seal of approval.
It has. we also had some packaging and some smart tech awards. And then I was allowed to do a presenters award, which was just me deciding our favourite guest that we'd had.
Well, it is your show, Sue.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So I'm allowed then.
Yeah.
And the Virga Company. Do you remember them as guests? Yeah. They were great. They're 100% plant-based burgers, even though they didn't bring any.
They didn't bring one, which I'm still a little bit bitter about.
So that. And then the Chocolate Smiths were these two bonkers girls from Newcastle making completely mad chocolate. And it was their cheese and cracker chocolate that blew me away.
That just sounds bonkers,
Taste
and I
cheese
love it.
And crackers, yeah. And then the incredible St. Hugh's company, where they're making these they're producing these free range eggs with boosted selenium on them because their family have a genetic disease, and they've managed to put that into the free range eggs that help the whole family to
brilliant
boost that.
Stuff. Good.
Now, my favourite, they were on the show. Dunnet Bay Distillers. Do you remember them? I've got a little taste. So you've got to make sure you've drunk your cordial.
Oh, I have drunk my cordial. It was good. Very tasty.
I didn't, sorry, I was too
You've
just
poured that all over the table. I just thought I'd update the listeners.
Yeah. So how about you have to have it, you have to have it neat. Sorry about that,
That's
Johnny.
Okay.
And,
so this is the Holy Grass vodka, is it?
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
And this is,
thank you.
This is made of grass that they literally pick outside their front door. And holy grass, they used to line the floors of churches with it. So because when you walk over it and slightly break the grass, a vanilla smell, a natural vanilla smell comes out. And this is what they make their vodka. It's got that.
No, it's very nice.
But it's a grass-steeped vodka.
It's a great way to start the day, isn't it?
I'm not sure about that.
Bit of neat vodka. We did it a couple of weeks ago as well.
Have you got some water there, Lucy? I think I might cut it with a little bit of water because it's probably taste it better. actually.
It doesn't actually hit the back of your throat, though, at all.
It's, no, it's very smooth.
It's very, very smooth.
If you want some water. You've drunk yours, have you?
I have.
Oh, good. Do you want some more?
That's not my first of the day. That's the really sad part.
Have some more. Look, so I can't take it home, so I need to have some more. But these guys are incredible, and they literally pick this stuff, you know, outside their house. Mm. And it's right in the top of north of Scotland. Beautiful.
Is it near Dunnet Head, which
Dunnet
is like the
Dunnet Bay.
So Dunnet Head is like the most northern northern part of mainland Scotland, I believe.
And it's proved and to it's be brilliant. Such a winner. It's really really.
And it has got that kind of grassy taste to it, kind of similar to the oil actually in a way, but obviously a completely different kind of thing. Mm. I could have a few of those.
Could have a few of those. They're very good. So all those people are coming to the awards. And if you want to meet them and actually talk to these guys about their products and stuff, a really good chance to do that. And also we've got loads of tastings going on, let alone a dinner as well with wine.
And the food was good last time. It wasn't that
kind
of...
You should see what we've got this time.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. Normally you get that horrible dry chicken.
No, we've got really funky food as well.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And are all the things that we've just talked about and tasted here today, are they all going to be there?
Yes,
at the, to taste for the attendees?
Just the All in the Taste Awards. So we've got, because it's quite difficult to organise, so we've got five of the food ones and five drinks that people can go and taste and go and vote for on the night. So we don't know who's going to win because it's the audience who decides, which is great fun. So yes, if you go onto our foodtalk.co.uk website, you can find details of how to buy tickets. Probably better hurry up though, because they're going to be taken.
Absolutely, it's a great night out.
Yeah,
and you get to meet Sue and myself, and Ollie might even show up as well.
To be honest, that's not really a selling point, though, is it?
Well, it is true though. So they've got all the facts now.
It's not really a selling point. So I'm very patiently sitting here. Ed Foy from Press.
Hello.
You're right now. I've tasted a bit of tomato ketchup, a bit of banana,
loosened
bit
up,
of,
been
a bit
spectrum,
of chocolate. I've had
a real
some vodka.
Spectrum.
You're all right now.
No, very good. Good vodka way to start the obviously day. Helped.
Yeah. Mm. Now, whilst you were living in Los Angeles and New York, Press founders Georgie and Ed developed a love for cold pressed juices. I'm going to ask you what the difference is between cold pressed in a minute. And your favourite juice is not only a source of daily enjoyment, but helped you to add much needed nutritional stuff to your diet.
Correct.
There are loads of juices out there.
It's
a pretty tough market.
That is true.
But your branding is incredible, isn't it? And it really does stand out, I think.
Well, thank you. It's been a journey for sure. I mean, we started... The New York and LA thing sounds more glamorous than it was. I was just working in the States and so was Georgie. And we just kind of saw, as everyone has, the rise of health engagement. You know, everyone's understood that the gym has been a part of health and wellness, and then food's the kind of next wave. And I think mindfulness and that side of things is the wave to come after that.
Possibly all of those have passed me by. But anyway, I'll take your word for it.
You go to the gym.
So we brought back, first idea was cold pressed juice and juice bars. And really for us, it was that you're living a youngish person's life where you're working very hard. You're also living very hard in terms of your social life and trying to do it all. And it was a kind of a shortcut, as it were, to something that tasted great and got kind of veggies into your diet. So, yeah.
And cold press being the optimum, really, because if you're cold pressing it, you're not losing anything. As soon as you heat, that there's a degree of the nutrition that goes, isn't there?
Correct, exactly. So there's this kind of balance between how do we create a product that's commercially sustainable so that it has a long enough shelf life. When we first started, it was a 3-day shelf life product, which is very hard to make into a commercially scalable
very, very
business.
Difficult.
So there's a technology called HPP where you put the bottle into a cold water tank, pressurize the water, and it disrupts the cell membranes of the bacteria and so therefore kills all the nasty pathogens but leaves the nutritional content intact. Cold pressing, so you're trying to decrease exposure to air and oxygen because that creates the oxidation process which breaks down a lot of the things, which is a very natural process. It's what should happen. And the other part is in a given bottle because you kind of pull away all of the sort of husk of the vegetables, you end up with a lot more of the intracellular juice per bottle. So you get kind of half a kilo's worth of
as
veg.
As opposed to it just being squeezed by hand.
Yeah, and crushed and put in.
Yeah.
So
So cold pressing and HPP are two separate
processes. Absolutely.
Because I always hear them talked about together. And I was like, oh, is one like, you know, just a different name for the other? But yeah, it's really interesting to get the facts.
And I've got in my sort of research here that this method ensures the juice never reaches above 3 degrees.
Correct.
Meaning that all of your bottles literally do resemble raw fruit and vegetables in their natural state, with the maximum level of vitamins, enzymes, minerals and nutrients that you can possibly get, really.
Yeah, that's it. And I think in the end, we've always kind of been very aware of the fact that taste comes first in all of this. Like everything we've just discussed is, does it taste good? And now tell me the other bit.
Yeah.
And what you want is so important.
About. Yeah, yeah.
Great taste, and then backed up by hopefully some really good science and ingredient fact base that customers are happy to see. But for us, it's always green juice isn't everyone's cup of tea. But what it should do is it should taste right. And so the cold pressing process makes the texture very smooth without bits and pulp, and also gives you a really, you will taste if you have, I'm sorry, I didn't bring samples today.
I was going to imagine a little bit disappointed by
I
that.
I did really. Not get that memo. So I apologize. We'll be sending you samples.
Oh, well, that's second prize, isn't it? That's pretty good.
But you can get them from Selfridges and Harvey Nicks and Harrods. I mean, they are everywhere.
So we're now distributed in around 400 places all over the UK. And that's what's been cool too. A lot of people said this is a London-based product, and actually we're all over now starting to be in Europe as well. Yeah. So
get one of those. And the whole point of this is it's low calorie. It's sort of raw, it's unpasteurized. You've got some nut milks in there sometimes and a little bit of supplements, but it's all the things that you would do if you were trying to press it yourself, I guess.
Exactly. And what we have found is it's sort of time. Get a blender for Christmas, use it for 3 weeks, and then it goes to the back of the cupboard and never comes out again.
Because it takes quite a lot to clean.
And it's also quite expensive because of you buy a bunch of fruit and veg, it sits in your fridge, you don't do it every day, so some of it goes in the bin. And so it's a sort of... It feels when we started like everyone viewed this as a luxury product, and actually today it's kind of something that's great at a price that we're trying to get always cheaper and cheaper, so that more and more people can just buy it, grab and go without thinking, and have something they love that's good for them.
And is it possible to cold press at home? Because I mean, I think I used to have one of these centrifugal juicers where you end up with a whole load of pulp left at the end, and you know, it's a real mess to clean the thing out. So is it something you can do at home?
You can, but you'd have to buy a very expensive piece of equipment, and you'd probably end up hating your life. Having been from very small machines up to a bigger scale, it's a very...
That's always the thing that's put me off about it, is that I like the idea of, you know, getting all those nutrients in liquid form, you know, have it with breakfast or any time during the day. But yeah, the faff of, you know, buying all of this fresh stuff and then kind of, you know, just cleaning extracting the juice of it, the cleaning. Yeah. And there's always a lot of waste as well, which, you know, never feels good in our house. So
no, exactly.
And you're proud supporters of Mind, aren't you, the mental health charity?
We are. So the weird part about this journey is I kind of started press with Georgie. And it was very much a business focus. We're both into health and wellness, but I, in the process of starting a business, went through the normal stresses and strains of entrepreneurial life and got into a very unhappy place just from pure fatigue and exhaustion.
Stress,
exactly. So adrenal fatigue, high cortisol levels, all of those things. And so discovered breathing exercises, and that for me was literally a life-saving thing. And so for me, it's acknowledging that this is something that can happen to anyone at any time for various reasons, and that so mental health is such a dictator of all the other parts of your life. And it's something that's becoming more and more easy to talk about. People are more happier to say. So we do these events called Motivate, where we get 200 people who come and pay money, and ticket sales go to Mind, and we'll get speakers from Mind or advocates of mental health and get them to talk. And you know, for me, it's been about saying, listen, I had to manage my life in a different way than I ever thought I would to make sure that I was happy first, because that is the baseline for every other part of your life.
With health, so mental health is a real determinant of physical health, in your view?
Oh my God. And I think it's only just becoming the awareness that actually it's the start of the journey, not the end.
People are starting to become more happy to talk about it, I think, which is hugely positive.
Because
it's, you know, it's always been one of those very stigmatized things. So it's brilliant to hear that you guys are doing that.
I think one of the big learnings for me has been, having studied it and written articles about it, is that a lot of us look, when we think we're mentally going through something, we very much look to our brain as the cause of it. And therefore the next logical step is I'm mad or there's something wrong with me. And actually for me, it was because I'd had adrenaline and cortisol levels too high for too long because I was stressed. And that was causing all of the unhappiness. So actually it's a physiological issue. And that's a much nicer way to talk about it.
If you broke your arm or pulled a muscle, then people wouldn't have that reaction, would they?
Exactly. And so I think it's a really big change in the way people think about it for themselves and for other people.
good. Yeah. Well, we're going to have a little break. A little bit more vodka if you want.
Lovely.
A little bit left over. Or some more banana ketchup. My favourite. A little bit of chocolate. So we're going to have a little break and then we're going to come back and talk to Johnny Holmes of Vendees. We're going to talk about vending machines, which actually I'm quite interested in. I know you wrote a big article on and stuff on.
Yeah, it was quite a long time ago. About stuff in the States. So it'd be really interesting to hear what's happening over here.
In the meantime, we have a little pre-record. I was invited along to eat some pizzas. That was a shame. So we're just going to listen to that and then we'll get back to you. Speak to you then. I'm now right in front of Claire. Claire, I forgot your surname already.
Barton.
Of course it is. Sorry about that. In front of Claire Barton, and because we're having this food and drink networking club at the Bakehouse in Tunbridge. Claire, is the Bakehouse your sort of little project? Is it yours?
Yes, it is indeed. I worked up in London for many years and I was made redundant, so I decided to retrain and do what I really love, which is baking.
Well, it's not just any old baking, isn't it? So I'm actually in your kitchen now. We've got a huge, big... Is it that just a normal oven or is it a specifically pizza oven?
No, this is a deck oven ready for our bread. So the good thing about the technology now in bread baking is that it's on timers, so we don't need to work through the night. They turn on at 4 o'clock in the morning and so they're ready and hot enough for me to start baking at 6 o'clock.
That's a bit, I mean, that's fairly, you know, unsociable, but definitely better than 4 o'clock in the morning.
Believe me, some of the bakeries I've worked in, I've worked all through the night. So this is definitely a step up.
So we've got these people joining the networking food and drink club tonight. Yes. Now I've got in front of me six. Are these pizzas or are they actually bread?
No, these are pizzas. These are sourdough pizzas. So we are giving you everybody here an evening a kind of snapshot of what we would do when we have one of our pizza nights, which is something we do in the evenings for the good folk of Tunbridge. And they've become really, really popular. And I think what the great thing is once you've had one of our pizzas, you realise there's...
Don't want to go anywhere else, do you?
No. And I think you do become a bit of a pizza snob, sadly. Well, good for us.
Yeah. So why sourdough? Because sourdough is actually quite intensive and quite difficult to make. But why for you would you use sourdough?
Well, it really goes back to that I have lots of allergies and lots of problems with my... food, and for many, many years I haven't been able to eat bread. I happened to go away on holiday to San Francisco and someone offered me some bread and I very gingerly took it and I was like, oh, I don't feel unwell. And someone said, oh, it's sourdough, and I'd never ever come across this before. And I came back and really the supermarkets, a few of them had it. And so I swapped over from packet bread to that. And then because of this change in my career, one of the things I decided to do was to go and retrain, primarily to look at pastries and croissants and things like that. But where I went to in the end was a place called the School of Artisan Food up in Nottinghamshire. And the main driving is going back to traditional food preparation. And one of those is sourdough. So... from there on, it just became kind of
it was your thing.
Exactly right, and it means that I can eat anything. We have lots of people that come in and say they can't eat bread, and we just suggest they eat it. And so from that, we've got quite a big following from people that it's
generally feel terribly bloated when they've had bread and stuff like that. Yes. And sourdough having a culture and fermented, I presume that's probably why it's slightly better for you. In my opinion though, Claire, I have not come across a sourdough bread from a supermarket that I've liked yet.
Well, I think since I've started making it myself, you then realise that it's a step up from a packet bread, but when you come into a proper bakery where you know that there's the starters and it's taken 2.5 days to make, there's, you know, and everyone...
I'm not going to do that myself, am I? I'm going to rely on you to do that. So I've got a sourdough base, and you've got two sorts of pizzas that you're just making in front of me. So exactly. I'm trying not to stop you because you've got loads of people waiting. So what's this one just here?
Right, well, we're doing two white ones today. They've got cream on, and one of them's called the Kentish. It's a blue, and we're using a Kentish blue cheese, pears from our local fruit farms over in Staplehurst, honey. So it's something slightly different. So although we do things like margarita pizzas and things on our evenings, we try and jazz it up, and so we're doing that one. We've got fennel sausage, so we're doing a spicy sausage one on the tomato base, and then this one is a mushroom as well. So lots of people, when they think of white pizzas, they think of them as having a white sauce and they're fairly hefty, but these ones aren't. They're lovely and light.
So I can see the tomato sauce, which is what you would expect.
Yes.
This white sauce that you're putting underneath, yes, the, you know, the cheese and pears, what's that made of?
Double cream.
So you've just literally got a pizza base and, yes, you've just put double cream on the bottom. Yeah. I'm so looking forward to trying these.
Because it's all to do with the flavour, isn't it? I mean, so the sourdough is gonna, it has great flavour, and then what you're trying to do is to showcase all the product on the top, and it's from that you get all the great taste. And obviously it's made really, really quickly. It will take 6 minutes once it's in the oven.
So how hot is the oven?
It's up to 290.
Yeah, and that's the problem with me is I do make sourdough sometimes. It's quite intensive, but I can't get my oven hot enough. And a normal oven you have at home, that's what you struggle with.
Exactly right. Before I opened the bakery, I made bread at home, and I think I fused it about 3 or 4 times within 6 months, because you're trying to get it up to 220, 230 to try and get that heat.
240 if you're lucky, but that's about it.
And on a fan oven, there's no way you can do it. So you really need to have one of these big decks. Yeah.
Right. So we're going to have all this in a minute. I'm really excited. I'm looking at all the different stuff. I've never, ever thought of putting cream on the base of pizza. It's a really, really good idea. And any trends you're seeing in terms of pizzas and baking? I know you do beautiful bread here as well.
I think from the point of view of the pizzas, I think it's a revelation about sourdough and the actual bases. I think from my point of view, that is the real trend in the pizzas. In the bread, anything that is natural. And I know that sprouted grains are now very in, but that's a whole different thing that we can't really do commercially. But everything that we do on a Saturday is sold out. People are willing to try anything. So if their favourite bread isn't in on a Saturday, if it's already sold out, they'll try anything. I think the thing is that it's sourdough, and they've realised they love that, and it's then adding on a different level to it.
Best toast in the world.
It is. I think when everyone I've talked to, and this is why we actually have a toast bar here, everybody who has sourdough bread, and especially of a certain generation, said, this is how I remember toast being. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic. And I really believe that if you've got any town or any village across the UK, or Europe, I guess, but if you've got a bakery in the centre of town, that is, you know, there's a great community there, because the bakery is almost the heart of a community, or it should be.
I totally believe that. One of the reasons I opened the shop was to have a place that people could come and congregate. And that certainly is the case. And upstairs, we've got seating for about 60 people. And we do have big groups come in and they sit and eat their toast or they have their breakfast. It's just great.
That and the pub, obviously.
And we've got some great ones of those in Tunbridge too.
So if anybody's anywhere near the Tunbridge area, they need to go and visit the Bakehouse in Tunbridge. Highly recommend it. It's right in the middle on the high street. Can't miss it. Beautiful old Tudor building, looks like. And I'm going to end this interview because I want to try some of those pear and gorgonzola. So thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.
So there you have the Bakehouse at 124 Tunbridge. If you're anywhere near there, you really need to go in. And they're such lovely people. So, make your mouth water, that does. We're back in the studio. We've just been eating a load of diverse stuff, which is our job, really. And we've talked to Ed Foy of Press. And now we're just going to have a chat with Johnny Holmes of Vendy's. Now, Vendy's, that they make high-tech machines that literally can vend almost anything. Vending's quite big in America and stuff like that. It hasn't really, really caught on here, Guy.
The kind of things that you typically see, you know, you've got your water bottle vending machines, your cola vending machines. They've started doing some interesting stuff at airports where you can, like, get a charger or a keyboard or something like that, which I thought was always quite odd. Because you're parting with quite a lot of cash. And my experience of vending machines is they hang on to your cash and they don't give you the thing that you've asked for. You have to shake it until it comes out. So if I was doing that with a, you know, £1 bottle of Coke, fine. But you know,
well, Johnny can do
expensive.
This with ice cream, eye protection, champagne, plug adapters, plasters. You name it, they can vend it. That's true, isn't it, Johnny?
That's a great tagline as well.
A real spectrum, actually. And I think going back to your example of the machines you've seen at the airports, they're getting much more high tech. I mean, they are more expensive. I mean, a big part of our business is the more straightforward vending. But we're investing a lot of time, effort and money now in the more screen-based, so they're touchscreen machines. You get a lot more information rather than relying on the product to sell itself with what you can see through the glass. You can actually find out it's whether it's nutritional information, more about the for the electronic devices, a bit more information to do with them. And it's really moved on. I mean, we went to Japan when we first set the business up about 12 years ago, expecting to see these really high-tech machines. And they were a bit more advanced. But I think as an industry, it does have that stigma of you're going to lose your money and you hang off the machine to share.
But if you if you really, really think about it, it makes sense to have vending machines. I mean, it totally and utterly makes sense when people are traveling at weird times or... Yeah. You know, relatives in hospital and they're finding themselves there at 2 o'clock in the morning and haven't eaten for ages and ages and ages or whatever it might be. I mean, there's a real role to play. And we need to sort of, there's some sort of taboo about it in some ways. Like it's down market and it shouldn't be, should it?
No, there is. And we actually started in the hotel sector. So we put machines in sort of mid-tier hotels where you could buy the things you would often forget, ranging from plug adapters, toothbrushes were some of the biggest sellers.
I hate that when you arrive at a hotel room and go, oh, I forgot my toothbrush again.
I did it just
we still do
it.
We sell thousands of them and we still arrive without a plug adapter. And
yeah.
It's so frustrating. But now we're sort of, we see, and this is where it ties in with your side of things, is we're seeing the move towards healthier snacking. And we think with some of these machines, you can really provide that at the point where people want a snack and they're not just faced with a Mars bar or a can of Coke.
Yeah. And a bag of crisps.
And we can give them products they wouldn't necessarily be able to buy in the area they work. They can find out more about it. And it's just that impulse which vending allows. And also for us, for people who are launching products, with a vending machine, you can actually impart information and provide the product at the same time. So it's going one step beyond just an advert running on a media screen.
So I know that you're into sort of like the Hilton, Holiday Inn, Premier Inn, all those sorts of things. So say I've got an organisation of some sort, I've got an office or something like that, and I would like to provide vending for my staff, say they work unusual hours or something like that. Can I actually specify to you what can be in those vending machines? So what can I say, look, I'd really like some healthy stuff, or I've got staff that need something hot or nutritious or, you know, whatever it is at particular times. Can I sort of give you almost a spec, or do you sell very specific, you know, machines that sell specific
things? Starting now, and I think our first step into that market, in the office market, and we're talking here probably more the sort of mid-tier in terms of size, because the larger ones often have canteens. And
absolutely.
They will have a provision for food and snack for their staff. We're looking at the sort of medium-sized companies, and we would probably need to be a little prescriptive just because of the flexibility of the machine.
So give them some boundaries, I suppose.
Yeah, but we certainly see it evolving where there's more flexibility. Probably maybe not the hot food side of things, but there could
be
provision of something that's semi-prepared that might be vended that then could go into a microwave oven or whatever. But certainly the first step will be some of the more slightly mainstream bars, whether it's Naked bars or Nine bars, something that's people might have some familiarity with, because there's also this barrier, I think, with vending, because they can't quite pick it up and feel it.
Yeah,
they still want some branding,
something that's familiar
that they know about. What about things like sandwiches or you know, can you do that?
We don't. I mean,
it can't be refrigerated. In essence, it's ambient.
Yeah, I think we've sort of shied away from the very much fresh food, just the challenges of waste, the hygiene elements as well.
Safety.
Yeah, and it's some people do it and they're very good at it, but it's very different operating model to where we work in. And I think we can deal with sort of shelf life that's measured in weeks rather than days.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Otherwise, you know, you're forever spending money and time, people going backwards and forwards to restock it or to dispose of stuff that is, you know, past its best.
And how do you do the restocking thing? So is that up to the client themselves, or do you do that, or do they get a choice?
No, so we our normal operating model is a fully managed service by us. The machines connect over the mobile phone network, so we can see what's selling, and therefore you can balance your fill levels in the machine, and over time you see what sells, and you can tailor your visits according to the rate of sale.
Because I remember being somewhere, I can't remember where I worked, like donkeys years ago, and there'd be a vending machine, you know, and obviously everybody loves salt and vinegar crisps or something. There'd be none of those left, but there'd be, you know, 400 bags of something else that nobody wanted.
Ready salted.
But you never knew that until the the guy pulled up in his little van and then restocked it. But what now it's gone to the point where you can actually monitor stock levels, you can advise people on what's selling, what isn't, and I guess predict that.
That's right. And there's some real analysis that can be done with that data. And actually from a commercial side as well, you can start promoting things on the screens we have at certain times of day that might sell better, whether it's an initial thing people might want in the morning versus something later in the day. And if to be really commercial about it, you can change the price points as well.
Yeah. Based on demand or based on the weather even.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some really interesting stuff you could do with that.
And so how does it work for the client themselves? So say I've got an office and I'd like to provide, we agree with you, what should be in there. Is it a rental model or is it based on how much they sell? How does that work?
It would depend a bit on the size of the office. In a smaller one, we would still like to think we could provide it, but we may look for some kind of service charge to cover some of those costs because the margins may not be particularly high unless you've got a certain
Because people don't, if a normal bag of crisps or something is, I don't even know what they are, 20p or something? 25p.
Look at the price.
I don't know.
70, 80p.
Lucy, how much is a bag of crisps? I don't know. Well, I say the a bag of crisps is 50p.
It can't be more than a tenner.
Somebody in a vending machine, not more than a tenner. Somebody in a vending machine is not then going to want to pay a pound for a bag of crisps because it's too much of a leap, even though they know it's convenient. So you've got to keep that fairly tight, haven't you?
Exactly. And I think the problem with sort of healthy snacking for a lot of people, and if they're used to buying a Walker's packet of crisps, is if you step that up to some dried fruit, which might cost 2-3 times that for a similar size bag, there's this bit of leap. I really do want to be healthy and paying more. And I'm sure Ed sees this with his juices versus maybe what else is available on the market, that you are having to pay more to get that quality.
But as an employer, you can do that as your sort of duty of care, can't you? And say, well, if you want to go and get crisps and Coke, that's fine, but I'm not providing it. We've got a vending machine, we've got all these things. I mean, you can try and push that as an employer.
Yeah, and that's certainly an angle that we, when we try and sell this solution in, it's something we work on, because I think it's when you break that down to what that's going to cost per employee to make it viable for us commercially, we're not talking about a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
And I think it's in the same way they might be looking after their mental welfare, their physical well-being, and providing them with healthier food has got to be benefit to all.
And as opposed to the non-food stuff then, and that's where it works in hotels, isn't it? It is about the stuff you've forgotten or
that
you suddenly need and, I've forgot my charger.
Quick panic.
Yeah. How do you stack those into machines? That's surely quite hard. Have you got
Some quite large machines for the hotels, which may be sort of metre square, more traditional size machine rather than the wall-mounted ones. Although we have recently launched in Premier Inn the wall-mounted ones, which have a cut-down range of between sort of 7 and 9 products. But in the, let's say, a Holiday Inn Express, where we've got more floor space, these are big glass-fronted machines, and we can get hairbrushes, we can get souvenirs, which we put in there of London buses. There's a real mix, and there's quite a bit of flexibility.
So what's the weirdest thing that people have in the vending machine?
That's a great question.
Weirdest request you've had?
Request? Maybe some I can't talk about on air, but there'd be...
But that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? But they get
the Japanese heritage. They vend some weird stuff over there.
No, they do. So I've heard. No, eggs and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Eggs?
Yeah. I mean, you have these machines where there's a...
How do they drop out the bottom?
Well, they're in a package.
Well, scrambled eggs, not...
Yeah, broken eggs. Eggs! Interesting. Yeah.
Well, it's healthy, isn't it? That's a step up from your bag of crisps.
Yeah. Eggs, but quite a lot of electrical products, I think, because people are travelling around and forgetting those things.
Yeah.
Or they're not compatible or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and certainly for us, we tend to stick with the more mainstream, because whilst you get requests, people saying, we get asked for bow ties, say, regularly. You find you stock it and then you sell one a year.
Amazing. So that's a perception rather than a thing.
But it's also not where I would go, where's the nearest vending machine? My bow tie is broken. No, it's just not the...
Can you break a bow tie?
You could snap it, I guess. Mm. We'll find out at the Food Talk Awards.
Yeah, we will, won't we? Yeah, definitely. And where do you see now, because the program's sort of coming to a close already, unbelievably, where do you see vending going? What's, in 5 years' time, where do you think you'll be in terms of developments?
Well, I think it's really trying to almost get away from the term vending as well. That people just see it as a means for providing products at the point where you need them, and there's that impulse. And so for us, I think we're trying to change that stigma that people have of, oh, I don't want vending, there'll be problems, we'll lose money.
You need to think of another name. Yeah.
Automated retail sounds a bit sort of too wordy.
Yeah, you need to do something a bit funky. Yeah, but that's what you
self-service,
need.
Self-service, I think, is the concept that I remember when we wrote this article a year or so ago.
Like a
self-service cafe almost, because this was specifically about food stuff. But it was all fresh, so I think it was attached to a place that actually prepared the fresh food there, but they also had the, you know, the self-service aspect, which, you know, is for people who are like really rushing or, you know, need that extra convenience.
But surely that market is going to grow. And especially now that it isn't just trying to find loads of coins that you shove in, you know, you can pay by card.
Yeah, exactly. And with your phone, with Apple Pay or Android Pay, and that just makes it so much easier. And I think people going to have a quick purchase.
Yeah. And what about the security? Do you get people sort of trying to break your machines?
Or? I mean, in the office environment, I think it's
no,
different.
That's fine. But in the hotels, they're
quite big, solid, robust machines. I mean, we steered clear of the real budget end of the market because there is that.
Yeah.
Someone comes with a crowbar late at night and someone distracts the security guard while they maybe have a dig at the machine. But
they really need that adapter.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's no money in it. But presumably now, if you've got kit, you know, that charges stuff, I presume it has some
value.
Yeah,
there's quite a value of the products in those machines. I mean, we've gone with the large machines with a German manufacturer. It's big, solid, robust, high security. We have them on building sites where they potentially are prone to people giving it a hard time. And they stand up pretty well. Ultimately, if someone really wants to get in, they will do, whether it's a sledgehammer or something else through the front.
You won't be desperate for a toothbrush to get a sledgehammer out. So, very interesting. And if anybody is thinking that that's a sort of solution that they should have, VendEase. 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 And obviously, all details on our website. And it's vendease.co.uk. And think outside the box, I think, if you're a client. Could be all sorts of things, couldn't there? Ice cream, eye protection. Chargers, toothbrushes, all sorts.
Yeah, we can certainly mix and match and customise things to suit.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much. I'd also like to say thank you to Ed Foy of Press. I presume you're just going to be growing and growing, aren't you, Ed, really?
We're hoping
strength to strength.
Yeah, we've got a magazine online, which is awesome because it allows us to talk about the things we're passionate about. Thank you. And product as well. So we've got loads of cool stuff like vegan ice cream in development. We kind of want to be just known as a healthy food
business.
You're
doing snacks as well, aren't you?
Yeah, we have snacks and supplements, soups we already have, but we're redeveloping just to make them more exciting. Don't really know where the edges lie.
Mm-hmm. And your website,
press-london.com.
Press-london.com. Some really good content on there, isn't there,
Guy? Yeah, there is. I was having a read earlier, obviously, close to my heart, running a content website as well as a marketing agency. But I
really do think you've worked hard on the brand, and the brand is really clean and really stands out, which is very difficult in your sector, your category, because it's very competitive. Looks very upmarket, Ed.
Thank you. But the prices are affordable.
You can tell he's got a marketing background, can't you? Yes, so good luck with that.
Thank you.
And just to let you know again, the Food Talk Awards, June 15th. Be there if you want to taste some of this incredible stuff. And don't forget, we're not just about taste. We're really looking at people who are trying to do things that are new and different. And you've been listening to the Food Talk Show, and we're syndicated to dozens of radio stations across the UK and further afield. And you can find us on iTunes and Podbean. You can also download us on your podcast app on your phone, which is where I listen to it.
Is it?
Do you listen to us?
Yeah, I get it on the website.
Because
I go there to share it every week.
I listen to us just to make sure.
I'm going to have to start playing it live in the office, I think, so that everyone can
Make them listen to it when they want to.
Listen to me.
And if you want to recommend any future guests, we're always on the lookout for people doing something groundbreaking or different. Get in touch with us via Twitter on @FoodTalkShow. Or you can, listen to all of our 100 podcasts, which is what Guy does, listens to himself, foodtalk.co.uk. Have a good week. Bye now.